Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast, featuring inspiring stories from great Americans who are making a difference. Your host is West Point grad, former Army Ranger, and founder of Authentically American, Dean Wegner.
Welcome to the Authentically American Podcast. I'm your host, Dean Wegner, and today I'm joined by my good friend and great American, David Akers. David is a legendary NFL kicker with an inspiring story of hard work and perseverance. We had a great time today talking, and I know you're going to enjoy hearing about his journey from being cut multiple times as a rookie to breaking the NFL season records for field goals made, field goals attempted, and points scored without a touchdown. David, thank you for joining us here on the Authentically American Podcast. And I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, you and I met on a golf course.
We did, absolutely.
And we hit it off, have kept in touch, and honored to
Pun
call
intended.
You a friend. Yes. Honored to call you a friend and honored to have you as a guest here this morning. And you know, just come to get to know you and respect you and who you are as a man and your faith and your family and everything you've accomplished. And one of the things I didn't know to start it off is, you know, where did the whole, you know, football kicking start when you were young? Did you start off as a football kicker? Did it start as soccer? Where did it all start?
Well, it's an interesting kind of story because as you go through life, you can kind of look back on events and see how the trail was blazed and you weren't even expecting it. So it was the spring of my sophomore year. I had some buddies that wanted to get together, go to our high school on the football field and just play a pickup game. I just put the ball down and I hit a 45-yarder, just kind of like, didn't really think much of it, had fun, and it was more about hitting the guys, you know, two-hand touch. And I got a call out at school about 2 weeks later. Well, didn't even think about it. One of the guys we were playing with, dad, was one of the assistant coaches on the high school team. And he told his dad that I hit this field goal. And so they said, hey, would you be interested in kind of coming out? The problem was, as I was a soccer player in Kentucky during that time, the high school season was in the fall, same as football. Uh-huh. Well, here in Tennessee, it's spring and fall. So I was like, how am I going to do this? So I go and I talk to my parents, and they said, look, if you can keep your grades up, we don't have a problem with you doing this. But then I had to talk to the coaches. So the head football coach and the head soccer coach kind of worked it out, and they said, you know, we see that this is a great opportunity for you. So that is something that you wouldn't see today. Matter of fact, TSSAA, I don't think it's allowed to play a high school sport, two high school sports in the same season right now. So that wouldn't even allowed me. I would have never been able to progress if these two men didn't see a bigger picture and allow me to have an opportunity. You know, one day I'd go to practice here for a little bit, then go over to football practice. And then, you know, Tuesdays we had soccer games and Saturdays we had soccer games. And then Friday nights we had the football, obviously. So they just worked it all around. I had a great football season that year. Started getting some kind of college notes and letters coming in. Back in the day, we weren't doing the Twitter, obviously. So we would get these letters from the different colleges and started having some conversations. And I was going to most likely play collegiate soccer, most likely at the University of Kentucky. And basically, I made a decision going into my senior year, like right before the season, that I was going to give up soccer and just focus on the football, because the way soccer was working back then, and this is really before Title IX really kicked in and they took away more of the scholarship opportunities, it was basically a 4 years where you get 25, 50, 75, and 100 over a four-year period. Well, Division I football, you either get a full ride or you don't get a full ride. And back then, there was like 90-some scholarships. Yeah. I think now we're down to 85, 86, something of that nature. And you can only get 25 during the season now. So a lot has changed in high school and collegiate sports. But because of the time that I was able to do it, it opened up so many opportunities. So I didn't go to University of Kentucky. I was asked if I wanted to walk on, which I really wanted to go there initially. But Howard Schnellenberger, an iconic coach who not only was part of the 72 Dolphins undefeated team, won the national championship at the University of Miami as a head coach when they beat Tom Osborne and the Nebraska Huskers back in the early 80s. And then he was there at Louisville from 85 to 94. And so I went there, got a full ride, played 4 years, and it's funny, I went there as a punter and never punted a down. Ended up kicking 4 years, and then, you know, that was kind of the kickoff, if you will, to my football career.
Yeah. Well, I did not know that story, Dave, so thank you for sharing. But did I understand this right? The very first field goal was 45 yards right through the middle.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess, you know, playing with backyard style, there's no pressure. No pressure there. My first field goal, let alone extra point, with my high school team was 27 yards, but it was 0-0, and that was the game winner. And I kind of went, man, this is kind of fun. I got kind of the hero today. That was neat. So it definitely got me. And a matter of fact, my first punt was an errant snap. And I went over, I got the ball, looked up, and I got blown up. I was like, well, that didn't hurt either, so this is all right, you know? So it's just kind of funny how you look back on things in life and again, how it was paved along the way, and very appreciative of people that gave me opportunities. I talk about this a lot. I talk about our team. You know, we're going to have people that come off the bench and on our team for just a minute or two. We have our full-time starters, and we have our all-pros that are going to be with us through life as we go down the road. And I can think about those people that, you know, had big impacts on my life at certain times. And though we're not, like, lifelong teammates, there are just these moments where people make a significant impact on your life.
Oh, yeah. For the rest of your life and your brothers for life. And as I was doing the prep and the research, David, one thing I didn't know either was, you know, there was some adversity before you got on with the Philadelphia Eagles.
So basically what happened, I was undrafted. It's kind of an interesting story in this regard, because usually when an NFL team calls you on draft day and says, look, we're looking to pick you for the next pick. I got that call from the Steelers in the 7th round. I'm like, oh, my goodness.
Steelers.
Yeah, I was really excited. Like, I'm going to receive my name, come across the board. And, of course, we didn't have flat screens. We had the tube TV, so it, like, comes around. And it said KR, kick returner, Michael Adams. So they went special teams. They just decided to go to a returner instead of a kicker. So that being said, I was like, man, statistically making an NFL as an undrafted free agent is really, really small. And you get these free agent, you know, contracts. And basically the way the NFL works is you can get some upfront money in your guaranteed bonus and whatnot. But basically the paragraph 5, which is your base salary, does not kick into effect until you play the first regular season game. So even though your contract states X, Y, and Z as far as what money, it doesn't matter until you play that opening day roster. Yeah. And so I go to the Carolina Panthers as a free agent. Things are going well as far as what I'm learning, but I realized really quick that John Casey, who was their main kicker, who went to the Pro Bowl the year before, really wasn't threatened by me. But because of that, he was very giving of his time and his, you know, kind of his knowledge, and almost paying it forward to a young cat like me. I was a lefty. I had a different form. And I saw the benefits of watching this guy as a professional. And I just wanted to be that sponge. I learned from him. And then I went through the 3 preseason games and was released. And I'm like, okay, undrafted, already been released now. Now
what's
what?
Next?
So as a kicker, it usually takes you a couple times unless you're drafted. And so I had a next opportunity to go to the Atlanta Falcons in the beginning of 1998. Went there, and they had this kicker named Morton Anderson. Now, Morton played till he was 47 years of age, And as he was late in his career at this point, he was 38. And I was like, oh my gosh, the great Dane, you know, that I get to watch. He's a lefty as well. And I watched him daily, how he trained, how he got himself ready for the season, his preparation as far as mentally, how he did it physically, and how he was able to do things, you know, even with the balls and all that. And I just was like, man, I had so many questions to him. And he actually started calling me Q for question boy, you know. So again, I just wanted to be that sponge to learn. And so then I get released after the 3rd preseason game, and they were saying, David, it looks like we want to bring you back on the practice squad. But during that release, the Washington Redskins called and said, would you come up and work out for us? So I go up there, and they said, we want to put you on a practice squad. All right. Morton Anderson's with the Falcons, Hall of Famer. Not a Hall of Famer. I'm going to the Washington Redskins. Yeah. And so After 3 weeks, I get activated. And this is where it's that Jerry Maguire moment. Like, show me the money, Jerry. Show me the Quan. I go out to Seattle, and I'm attempting my first kickoff. So I'm kicking off my career, if you will. I'm kicking off the game. And I hit a high kind of short kickoff. And I say this to people. Steve Burchard catches up the middle. He cuts out to the outside. As Chris Berman likes to say, he could go all the way. And he went 90 yards for a touchdown. My first kickoff, regular season kickoff in the NFL. I'm like, this is not the way
I dreamed.
I was dreaming about it, laying awake at night saying, this is how it's going to go down. It gets better. My first field goal attempt was a nice short 48-yarder, and it went wide right. The next attempt was 49. It goes wide left. And so, needless to say, I was released two days later.
0 for 3.
Yeah, so cut by three different teams, was ready to give up. I was working out playing basketball in Atlanta, December 23rd. Well, actually, it was December 22nd, about 5 o'clock at night, and the Eagles called. And he said, hey, we would like for you to come out and work out for us tomorrow. And I went, tomorrow? Like, I haven't kicked in a month. And okay. And so we fly up there. I remember going out. It was 0-degree wind chill.
That's Philly.
In Philly, you know. And you got to understand, back when they had the vet, they had a parking lot, and they literally brought in a dump loads of dirt and then put sod over top, and they called that their practice field. And it was on top of asphalt. You could see it feathered up to it. It was crazy. And then they had the little indoor facility bubble, very similar to like what the Titans have. So I go there, and I had a terrible workout. I mean, terrible. Out of all my workouts, still the worst workout I ever had. And so I was like, this is ridiculous. I get on a plane. We're supposed to be meeting our families for Christmas. So my wife picks me up at Hartsfield International, and we're about to head up to Louisville to see my wife's family and my family. And she goes, how'd it go? I said, it was terrible. It was the worst workout I ever had. She goes, that's funny. Your agent called. They want to sign you. What?
Either of all the irony.
At least either they're prophetic or maybe we both got a little lucky, but it was an awesome experience. The difference is they wanted me to go play in NFL Europe. They wanted to allocate me there to the spring of 99. So I went over there. I played in Berlin, which was actually where we stayed was in the East Berlin side. And you would think 1999 that that's a decent length of time from when the Cold War kind of broke and the wall came down. But they were still building a ton, and especially right at the wall for the East and the West to kind of come together. So we lived in a little area on the East Berlin side called Kupnik, where in Kupnik, in that area, they spoke Russian and German and did not speak very much English. I remember, Entschuldigung, bitte, sprechen Sie English? You know, that was what we said all the time. So the night before our second to last game, I got really sick. I mean, really sick. I couldn't figure out what was going on. I was coming out both ends, and it was like I was chilling. I had salmonella food poisoning. I had no idea. And I didn't think food poisoning would be that big of a deal. But I get put into an East Berlin kind of university hospital. Again, nobody speaking English. And this is a made-for-TV movie, but I'm going to give you the condensed version. I was hospitalized. We had to get the embassy involved because the team basically left me. I didn't have my passport, no change of clothes, nothing. My wife had no idea any of the stuff was going on. I get put into a room that I end up eventually getting quarantined to. It's a very small, like cot-ish type of a bed. One single window, a sink, and a wheelchair with a bucket. And that was it. That's all I had. No TV, no radio, no books at that time. And instead, I ended up getting a few books from not the team, but the organization of the team. Some people came in and were able to give me something to pass the time, which actually led into some other areas because I hated to read, You know, when I read in high school, it was like because I had to do it and give me the cliff
notes.
Teacher
made me.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have an enjoyment of it, but I read three novels that week. The Mark of the Assassin was the first one I read. I remember that like it was yesterday. And it's kind of interesting as it kind of moves me into my faith journey because I started reading those books, came home, and when we had some time before training camp started with the Eagles, my wife had been reading this series called Left Behind. And so it's a fiction-based novel series of basically the rapture, the second coming of Christ. So I'd start reading these books, and I went, wow, I mean, I was a believer, but like it's kind of coming to life, and I know it's fiction. But then I'd start seeing some of the scripture, and then I would go to a Bible and say, "Is this true or is this fiction?" Yeah. And then start reading the context that it was encapsulated with, and got me actually reading the Bible from being down.
So that's where your faith started then.
I believed at 12 and under. I guess you would call it some sort of a, you know, kind of class you would take and accept Christ in the Methodist Church at 12. But I didn't really start seeking and having that life journey until I was basically 24.
Wow.
And the Eagles had a great group of men that were strong Christian brothers, had a great chaplain that would bring us together, and we had a great run. We never won a Super Bowl, but we had a great group of guys that were very successful on the field and off the field. And so with that, I am forever grateful. Again, I go back to my team, and you know, some people call it the team, your network, your, you know, your family, the body of Christ, whoever God brings in your life that you all kind of learn and support and encourage one another and hold each other accountable, but yet also kick each other in the rear when needed.
Is that typical of most teams?
No.
Because they don't hear a lot about that. It's
no.
Yeah.
And I think even going back to when the Eagles won 2 years ago, it was, again, a very strong faith-based team.
Oh, yeah.
So in that regard, I saw the teams that when we had a group that could stay together in that regard, because what happens is, you know, there's egos in there, right? And everybody comes from, and this is where I think America needs to be. We have to understand that a locker room has multicultural, multi-religion, different value system, different political system, socioeconomic, you know, all of that wrapped up in the melting pot of an NFL locker room, okay? Yeah. But there's one goal, is to win the championship. In life, we should be having the goal of, we need to have a championship in our life, but the only way you can do it is to come together. Yeah. And if we start looking at our political walks, you know, you're either far right or you're far left anymore, it seems like. There's no middle ground. No interest in both parties to be communicative and say, this is how we can work together. Other than that, I mean, you start hearing about locker rooms that have these rifts, you know they're never going to have success. Yeah. You don't ever hear that with the Patriots. You just don't. You don't ever hear those stories come out because there's such a cohesiveness in there and there's such a leadership that brings everybody together. And to my just humble opinion, that is the example of what America should be. It's in an NFL locker room.
Yeah. Not every NFL locker room, but
the ones that you described.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
Not the dysfunctional ones.
But it's amazing because a lot of those stories you don't hear. I mean, you don't hear the stories behind the scenes.
No, you don't hear the story. And honestly, there was a show in, it was the late 90s, early 2000s. It was NASCAR. It was called NASCAR 360. And basically, they would go into the life of a NASCAR driver. This was one of the first time, like, reality. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had Survivor out there, but you really didn't have reality TV. It was still the joke of it, like the Truman Show. But they would show these drivers and their families during the week and then leading up to race day. And I was like, man. The problem with the NFL is you see the helmet, you see the shield, you don't see the stories behind. Now, you'll hear the negative stories that come out, but you really don't hear them expand upon the individual. And there's a reason for that. They want to brand the shield. They don't want to brand the player.
Yeah.
And that's a frustration I have with the league because I think there's so many amazing stories, and I believe we all have a platform. Mm-hmm. And if you can use that platform to have a sphere of influence around the people that are, you know, you can connect with, then shame on you for not allowing that to happen.
Yeah. Well, since you're bringing that up, let's talk about the platform because I know you've had an incredibly successful career, David, from a professional NFL kicking standpoint, but you were incredibly active as well in the local Philadelphia community. So
I'm very thankful of where I ended up. Again, the path of how I got there was not going to be the way I would have written it in my book. I would have made it the first year, played longer. Mm-hmm. The reality is Philly was like a family to me. They accepted me into their family, and just like brothers and sisters do, you argue, you fight with each other at times. And Philly and I, we had those moments where I kind of talk about like as if you're playing poker, and you have so many times where you're getting the chips. Occasionally, you have to deposit those chips back for bad games and situations that come your way. But I just bought into the culture of Philly. It's a blue-collar town. Mm-hmm. They love their teams. People talk about how much, you know, they hate the fans. The fans are great. If you treat the fans how you would want to be treated and you give it everything you have, they love you. I mean, you're going to have the few here or there, but I'm just saying that's anywhere. Uh-huh. But that's why I love the city. I bleed green. I love the town because they just accepted me and they accepted my family. It changed the way my life kind of, you know, how it changed the direction of the course for my family, my kids. Two of my kids were born up in South Jersey, spent 15 years there. I mean, it blessed me beyond measure. But then also, you know, the way the organization did, they gave me a chance. And I played through three full contracts with that team where three teams said you weren't good enough and other ones, you know, weren't interested in me at times as well. And just to be able to have that, I'm eternally grateful for that and the opportunities.
Fantastic. So I guess getting back to the kicking, because you mentioned the very first kick was at 45 yards, right up the middle with the boys. But, you know, over your professional career, was there one that you think back, maybe not the longest, but one that had the most significance, the most impact that you said, you know what, that's the one I remember?
It's interesting to think about. There's so many different kicks in life that that I've experienced, you know, some good, some bad. But I would say my rookie year with the Eagles, I was a kickoff specialist and a long kick, you know, kind of long field goal kicker. They had Norm Johnson, who was a 17-year veteran, and they wanted to solidify to make sure that that was there. But I was kind of, they called it, I was Andy Reid's tinker toy. That's what they said, you know. And I'm extremely grateful to Andy for the opportunity. And I was kicking off okay. Back then, you weren't able to really work in a football. So people think, well, what does that mean? When you come to get a football out of the box, it's pink. It's got wax all over it. It's hard. You know, there's not much compression. But if you can bust the seams, make it more malleable, you have more compression coming off the ball. So in that regard, you hit the ball about 7 to 10 yards further.
By working it in?
Just working it in.
Wow.
And it really takes you about 20 minutes per ball, and you're ready to go. So we weren't able to do that back then. That did not change until Tony Romo dropped the wet ball for Martin Gramatica against Seattle in a playoff game. And what happens is the ball gets wet. It's got wax on it.
Slippery. Yeah.
Until the quarterback dropped it. Now, you know, nobody cares with the specialist, but when that happened, man, it was a game changer. So ultimately, you know, what was the original question part of?
So the most memorable. The most memorable.
So the most memorable kick probably was my first make with them because I wasn't really kicking that great. But it was a 53-yarder against Miami Dolphins. Doug Peterson, the current coach for the Eagles, was my holder. And so I smoked it, and the next kickoff went out the back of the end zone. And at that point, I was like, all right, I think I'm going to be here for a minute. So it bought me a few more weeks. So every Tuesday at 4 o'clock, I would get excited because I knew I was getting the next week's game check. It was week to week. So when you get your contract, you get paid in 17 weeks. Whatever that number is, divide that by 17, and that's how you get paid out. So I would, okay, I made another week, you know, and I remember one time.
Show me the money.
Exactly. Norm Johnson called me around 2 o'clock from the Eagles complex, and it came up, and I was with my wife, and I was like, oh, my gosh, they're calling me. I'm getting cut. And he's like, hey, man, when are you going to be home? I was like, dude, don't call me from that number. Do not call me from that number until like on a Wednesday, man. Do not call me from that. So
the anxiety that that creates.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, again, you've already been cut three times and played in Europe. You're like, there's not another chance after this one.
Yeah. So now, David, you're doing a lot of public speaking recently as well, and I didn't know the adversity about being cut three times and the ups and downs, and that's just the nature of a kicker. I mean, there's 1 second left on the clock. You're either going to be the hero.
Right.
Or you're going to be the GOAT. So what are some of these lessons as you're going out speaking to different organizations and different businesses that you share?
Well, I do two different kind of scenarios. With the obviously at a corporation, I'm not going to be talking about faith and scripture. But the reality is I like to, the first time I go to a place, I like to ask, do you know what a PAT is? Yeah, it's a point after touchdown. No, the reality is it's perseverance, attitude, and teamwork. Yes, you're going to have times you're going to get knocked down in life. You're going to have to get yourself up and keep going. And my dad would say, oh, you hurt your knee. I'm like, yeah, yeah, you know, I'm okay, I guess. I'm crying. He's like, just rub a little dirt on it. You'll be fine. I think in life, we have to work ourselves up to pick ourselves back up. And it's a practice to persevere. You know, like Malcolm Gladwell says, it takes 10,000 hours of practice to become an expert. Well, that's just in one field. Then you got subcategories. It's constantly getting better. And that's what, you know, the coaches say, you're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're never staying the same. So how do you have the want to pursue things? Well, if you fall down and you're giving up, you know, you're never a loser until you quit trying. So that's something that Coach Madden talked about. And so in life, you know, you have to just keep pushing forward. You're going to get knocked down. You're going to have trials. You're going to have tribulations. And so you have to be able to do that. How do you do that? You have to have an attitude that is saying, okay, I know this isn't great. It's not going well right now. But ultimately, I got to stay, and I hate the word, the process, but you kind of have to, because I think it's overused right now. Right. What are your ideas? Not to say that you give a false vibrato or something like that, where you're just like, hey, I'm the greatest. But you know inside, you're really not. Yeah. It's like for me singing. I'm a terrible singer. The quickest way to empty a room is for me to get up singing.
Karaoke night with David Akers.
It would be terrible. I'm just telling you. So ultimately, if you know you're good at something, what are you going to do to be able to pursue that? Are you saying that failing means you're a failure? No. Michael Jordan talks about that. And I love it. Back in the day, he talked about all the failures he had at shots, how many times he'd miss. And because of that, he was a winner, and he had that success because he learned from that. So when you're failing, you fail and fall forward, and you get yourself up and keep going forward. So that's how the attitude comes back into it, right? And then teamwork. There's always going to be somebody in your life that helps you. My high school coach that I was telling you about earlier that I just love, you know, today's day, he wouldn't be able to last 5 minutes out there. He's going to grab your face mask. He's going to call you a yellow belly, and I'll fight every one of you. Just let me have my back against the wall. Yeah. And he's that type of guy. But we love the guy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't have a ride to practice. He'll go pick you up in your truck, throw you in the back of the tailgate there. It will be loaded up with guys in the bed of the truck. And that's just who he is. But somebody called him a self-made man. And he said, no. There's no such thing as a self-made man. He said, if you think that you're self-made, you can own that person in 5 minutes. And what he's saying is this. You always got to have a mom, dad, grandma, grandpa. You know, aunt, uncle, brother, sister, cousins. Then you go break it down, you know, friends, coaches, teachers, counselors, principals, you know, pastors, rabbis, mentors, bosses along the line. Who's given you the opportunity? Who's taught you along the way? Who's encouraged you, held you accountable, and said, you have the ability to do this?
Yeah.
And so if you step back and you look at the situation, you can look at all those people, identify them along your life journey, and see who's been there. You need to identify those people. You need to realize that in life, and I say this as a kicker, I have basically 10 guys in front of me, 20 feet working in unison, that each and every one of them have a specific role and at an important time in a 1.2 second time frame that they have to do their job to their best of the ability before I can even attempt mine. I have to rely solely on those guys. So who in our lives are we relying on to do their job so we can have success? But like a rising tide lifting all ships, if they do their job, I do my job, we all have success together. So in the corporate world, there's a lot of times where people feel like they need to be micromanaging. You got to let them do their job.
Yeah.
You lead them in a way that they can have success. But if you have success, they have success. Generally, if you want to talk corporately, you generally make more money. That's what happens in the football world and in sports in general. Everybody has success. You're going to make more money. If you can have success as a company in leadership quality and the way that you treat employees, the mindset, is it for, I'm just getting up today and I'm just going to have a day and just go through the motions? Or do you, and I love this, this is the John Harbaugh, Jim Harbaugh, Jack Harbaugh family mantra. It started with Jack and Jackie that they said, attack each day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. Heard that for years. And so in a Ric Flair type of motion, you have to think about getting out of bed, ripping those covers off. Woo, I'm going to attack today with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind. And what does that mean? Does it mean you have to go out and make all this money to have success? Or is it saying, oh, I can go out and I can have a sphere of influence with somebody today. I can have a success in some part of my life today and think about that And when you do that, you can have that enthusiasm that becomes contagious. And when you have that, mm-hmm. you're affecting the people around you.
Love it.
Woo!
Ric Flair. Ric Flair, baby. All right.
That gets their attention when you're out there talking.
Absolutely. And you know, it's just, as I think back to, you know, you'd mentioned the Patriots and the culture that they built and didn't know the culture behind the scenes at the Eagles. That was key to success. And I think from a business standpoint as well, and that's where my focus is now. And I think back to the companies and the organizations I've been a part of. I mean, it's culture. It's culture, and then what drives the culture is the people behind it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm one of those guys. I'm not in, as a in business per se. I do some rental properties and things of that nature. I do a lot of speaking. So, you know, I can read P&Ls and those type of deals. But I love the shows like Shark Tank. Uh-huh. And I love The Profit. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, the people that really have the success, it is about the people that are, you know, surrounding the product and the process in which they perform it. And if you hold these people to a high standard, give them reason to buy into why they mm-hmm. need to be into this standard and not just going through the motions, I believe you can have success. And that's why I love our country. That's why people pour in and try to come to this country mm-hmm. because of what the founding fathers decided that would make us and set us apart. I'm just a huge fan of capitalism. Not for saying, well, you got the elitists over here. Well, if somebody's able to come up with a way to be successful, incorporate people within their lives that can make them successful as well, why are we saying, nope, that person right there, you need to share with all these people over here who haven't had the vision, the heart, and the drive, and the desire to do what you've done. We need to be able to give them that money. Now, I'm a very charitable guy. Mm-hmm. I'm a tither to the church as well, and I don't understand the idea of that. I feel that we should openly and freely and joyfully give how we feel like, you know, the Lord's prompting us.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of saying, you know, I'm kind of a smaller government guy as well. You know, I'd like to see that we as people can come together and have success in life together. And that's why people, you know, come in droves here. You don't see people like, well, I want to go to that country because, you know, they just have it going on. And I feel like there's a lot lacking in education in these days, not in the far part of, you know, math and science per se. I'm just saying in history and what really is taking place in that. Ultimately, I hate to hear about the racial divides and stuff because the people I talk with on a daily basis and in the locker room, we got along great. I just feel like there's such a narrative out there of trying to divide our country. Again, I like to see the idea of the successful NFL locker rooms mm-hmm. coming together, the melting pot of America, every culture, creed, all that come together, and we live in a way that is going to uplift everybody, and everybody has an opportunity. It's just what desire you want to wake up in the morning and attack that day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
You got it.
That's
this could be a whole nother segment that we go on. But
woo!
So you know, you're a big family guy as well, mm-hmm. David, so I'm curious. So there were probably some times where the butterflies were flying and you were getting nervous, you know, when you've got a big kick on the line. So I'm curious, do you get more nervous when that's happening or when your son's kicking and that game's on the line?
Wow. Yeah, so my son mm-hmm. is a kicker right now and a punter. And it's funny because if we didn't have curly hair together, I don't know if I could claim him. I'm 5'9", he's 6'2", you know. Uh-huh. I'm like, we look like Mutt and Jeff together. Mm-hmm. But definitely get more nervous watching him.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even close. Not even close. I would feel confident, go up, okay, I'm going to hit this kick. And now I'm like, not that he's not going to make it, but yeah. You just want your kids to have better success than what you've had. That's kind of way, and it's interesting that my daughter's a freshman. I've got a sixth grader, and my oldest is a senior. And I had this conversation. He said, you know, because I help coach, and they said, man, you know, some of the players, you know, are intimidated by you. And he said, even though he's short, he scares me. And I'm like, what do I do? They just said, because you're so intense. And I said to them, am I treating them poorly? And they're like, no, it's just because you have an intensity. And that's on the football field. And that's just anything surrounding the field. Because I feel like, again, I had so many incredible coaches that you focus in. It's about what you're trying, the drive to work. And I'm really fortunate enough to be with some really great coaches over there at the high school. And one of them coached in the NFL for 30 years, Alan Lowry. He was with the Titans, special teams coordinator. He gives of his time, right? He was an all-conference player at the University of Texas on both sides of the ball. So just yesterday in meetings, we're going over punt return. Alan's talking. Some of the guys, you know, really weren't paying attention. And he kind of walks out. And I said, I just want to say something. You all have no idea the legend that's standing up here before you. The amount of respect that I have for this guy and the amount of respect that the NFL has for what he was able to do for so many years, you all are just letting it go like it's not a big deal. You should be paying attention to every word he's saying because he has forgotten more about football than this whole room, including myself, know collectively. And they're kind of looking like down. And I said, I'm not trying to get on you. I said, you just got to realize the people that you get in your lives, if you can learn from them and people that are really knowledgeable, learn from them. But instead, we kind of go to the counter, you know, the cultural things, you know, social media and these things where they're not teaching you real valuable things. And this guy has lived it. He's experienced it. Even as a coach for myself, I'm like drooling on his words because he knows so much. And he came back in and he said, look, I volunteer my time. I'm giving you so many hours of preparation to come up to this meeting that you don't even see. Just give me the attention that the time deserves, not necessarily me. I was like, no, you deserve it. But in life, I believe that a lot of people don't know what goes in their background. They don't necessarily give the time or the creed to really know who they're dealing with. And it's more of a, I feel like almost an ADD kind of thing. You're like, oh, he's there. Okay, now that's, you know, there's no honor and respect at times. And I believe that kids say, oh, you need respect. Well, respect is earned. Yeah. And when certain guys like that, I see, they're not getting it. And that goes to a whole probably other podcast. But I'm so thankful for those people that are around. And it goes back to the original thing that for my son to be able to learn from this guy for the last 2 years has been, you know, just priceless. And then there's another guy that you're friends with, Craig Hendrich. Craig has worked with my son as well. I mean, there's a point where dad is a coach only can go so far because there's some butting of heads. I'll say something. He's kind of half walking away. Craig says the exact same thing to him. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And there's that moment where I'm like, have you ever heard that before? Yes. Okay. But he's saying it, and so you're buying into it. Yes. Okay. Now we're clear on that. But sometimes you need those different perspectives out there and just realize that, you know, maybe dad isn't a complete idiot. But on the other hand, having wonderful professionals that are coming in able to pour into my kid, I think he's going to have success because of, you know, guys like that in his life. And yeah, I feel like he's got a good head on his shoulder, but I do get extremely nervous. Going back to the original question, I went off a little tangent there.
That's good. And I'm just laughing inside right now because we have four kids, David, and my 15-year-old, you had shared he's got dreams of playing in the NHL, and just going through that similar story because when it was young, I mean, hung on to every single word I said. And then as you get older, it's like, I'm going to abandon every single word.
Yeah,
I'm like,
you know, talking about.
It is time for, you know, me to step aside and let, you know, somebody else other coaches.
Absolutely. And I think that helps them get to the next level. And, you know, going on to the collegiate level for my son here shortly, one of the schools said, you know, if you'd like to, you know, kind of be helpful. And I was like, you know, that's your job. Now you need to learn. He needs to sink or swim, you know, figure out what he's going to do without me kind of being there and this is what you're doing wrong. That's what you need to figure those things out. And you need to be able to pursuing how you train and all that. But I think that, again, that is part of what we're doing as parents and part of being a leader, you know, and the intensity that apparently I bring to these kids.
Well, I love that you, you know, called the group out and said, you know what, this guy who's been there 30 years, that coach you mentioned, because most people probably don't even know that story. And to survive 30 years in any career is a mark of excellence, and the NFL is so performance-driven, and it's so, okay, what did you do for me last season? If you didn't, okay, then we're moving on, and to think that he survived 30 years.
I mean, he started coaching with Fred Akers, no relation that I know, at UT, mean Texas. And then he coached under Coach Landry.
Yeah.
I mean, my goodness. I mean, you're talking iconic figures in the sport of football, but just the success he's had. But I agree. And Allen's just an example of a society thing that we need to focus on. And I actually see a difference in the locker rooms as I got older. I remember as a rookie, like, we would have to get chicken or donuts or something like that on certain days, and people can say it's hazy. No, it's just part of the respect that it's what has happened in times before. Uh-huh. You have to, and there were a couple guys, I'm not buying any of that stuff. Like, well, we all did it. Yeah. It's part of the tradition of the game. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I started my rookie year bringing in donuts for the special teams meetings on Fridays, to the point where I enjoy to be able to give that to them every week, and even expanded from the special teams to the O-line to the athletic trainers to the D-line. And so by the time my career was done, I was getting over 20 dozen every Friday delivered so that guys could have it, and coaches would come down. And for many years, it was Krispy Kreme donuts, you know. So that was a thing that, you know, I had – even when I was out in San Francisco and in Detroit, I just said, this is what I've always done. And, you know, because I feel like it goes back to what I was appreciative of as on my rookie year. And I don't see that. You got to enjoy the walk up the summit, because then you can kind of look back and you get that 30,000 feet view of, like, oh my gosh, this was really cool. And at times, even with my wife, we would sit and, like, pinch ourselves. Man, this is an amazing ride.
It's incredible.
But as you get up to summit, sometimes you have the highest peaks and the lowest valleys.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we're winding up our time, I did have one question that I'd like to ask all of our guests, David. And, you know, you've been a great friend and a great supporter of what we're doing with Authentically American. And I want to get your perspective on what it means to you to be authentically American.
Well, again, I think today, there's a rift that is happening, and there's a divide. There's a point, and I don't care what color you are. I believe we're Americans.
Yeah.
If you believe in the red, white, and blue, independence for all, and I would love that to be the case. You know, I hope that nobody judges me on my color or who I am, other than the color and the attitude and the character of my heart. And on the reverse side, I don't want to be judging anybody on that either. I just want us to all be able to go out and live our lives in a way that is patriotic, that loves our country. If somebody don't want to be in our country and doesn't want to see our country prosper, and I'm not saying, oh, you got to make all this money, and I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, in a country with the values that it was developed on, mm-hmm. And I don't understand why that is a bad thing. You know, when we're talking about, again, different areas of, you know, all of a sudden communism is supported in a, like, how is that, you know, I'm not trying to get to political thing. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, ultimately, we have issues in our country. Every country does, obviously. But I think we're doing pretty daggone well if you're not listening to the news and the narrative. And I'm not caring who's the president at the time. I'm just saying, if you look at it, it's so much negative. And I see that in how they even report in the NFL. There's a lot of guys that do amazing things. And a lot of you don't hear about it. But you hear about the bad things every now and then. How many deaths, how many gunshots, this and that, even in our nightly news here in Nashville. Where's the positive stuff? Well, I guess since that happens, it doesn't sell. I don't know. But ultimately, I'm proud to be American. Yeah. I'm proud of where I'm from. I've been to other countries. I literally kissed the ground when I came back into this country. Very thankful of the people that fight and serve and give us an opportunity for the freedoms that we can come and share our thoughts right here in the First Amendment. And along with that, I'm appreciative of guys like you that are trying to employ locals here, produce things here. As I wear something that's coming up, you know, maybe we start making some nice Eagle apparel for us.
And got an idea for you. So
as we do all this here, it makes me proud. Proud to know and be friends with you and what you're doing in the community, not only what you did and served for us. Mm-hmm. You have an incredible background. I've told some people. Is it true? It's really odd to be a pilot and a ranger, right?
Very.
Yeah.
Odd.
So didn't somebody at one, my story might be wrong, but didn't somebody question your patches at one time or like you sure? Like, that doesn't usually happen.
Well, to your point, David, the Special Forces Ranger side, that's on one, spectrum army. On the other side is the flight suit wearing aviators,
sure.
Which both are incredibly valuable. Both play an incredibly valuable role to the Army, but the two don't go together. And I had never anyone ask and question what I wore, but the first unit I walked into, because I had a Ranger tab on my flight suit, they looked like, what's wrong with that guy?
Okay.
What is wrong with that guy?
My memory wasn't as good on that. Uh-huh. I was kind of like, wait a minute. I thought there was something with that. But again, that just goes to your dedication, the leadership that you had that brought you through that. And then, again, I'm appreciative of all our men and women who fight and serve, the men that and women that are first responders as well. Obviously, there's some moments where, and we see it in the news, that things don't go as planned with some of these people. And, and those bad people, and they need to be gone and taken care of. But as a whole, we're very fortunate to have the people that serve us on a daily basis.
Well, I appreciate you sharing, and unfortunately, to reinforce, I mean, it is incredibly divisive right now in our country.
Yes.
And we've talked about as a team is how we can, make a difference in bringing everyone back together, because, I get asked sometimes, what's your political alignment with Authentically American? I tell them, we're apolitical. What we stand for, we're a brand that celebrates patriotism. Love our country, love what America stands for. Not to say we're perfect, but we love America.
Sure.
We're a brand that believes in the American worker, which is why everything we do, no exceptions, is made in USA. And we're also a brand, and I love that you're wearing the military green today, because we're a brand that honors our American heroes. And very intentionally, we donate 10% of our gross profits to veteran and first responder charities as a way to honor our American heroes. And I tell everybody, forget what political party you are. What we stand for is an American ideal. Yep. And I think we need to get back to that.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, some people see that as that's not a proper way to look at it. Mm-hmm. And I shun those ideas. I just think you should be proud of where you are, where you live, and the people that have come and served so we can be here.
Yeah. Well, David, I'm so thankful for your time and your friendship.
You.
And I do have a couple gifts for you.
Awesome.
So one, I know you do a lot of speaking at different events, and you oftentimes probably get a little bit more dressed up than today. But next time.
This isn't dressed enough? Oh, I love
it's
those.
Great today. So these are, very popular. These are authentically American socks. So
that's awesome. Thank you.
These are Carolina cotton, knit in Carolina. So not only are they a fun, patriotic style, but when you wear them, you'll pull them at the beginning of the day and they don't fall down, they don't sag. They're a better performing sock, which they should be.
We love better performing things.
That's
We're
right.
We're always trying to increase our performance.
And then it's funny, we have a new innovation that I want to show. And you said, maybe we should get the Eagles behind Authentically American. So, it's interesting. Just yesterday, found out we're likely going to be having some merchandise with the Predators.
Oh, fantastic.
So I'm a hockey guy, so I love that.
Right.
But this is actually collegiate, but I'll do a quick demo for you here. If you hold up that sleeve, David. So this is the A for Army, went to West Point. This could be the Eagles logo. This could be any college, any professional sports. So have you ever heard of sweat ink, sweat activated printing?
No, but that sounds really interesting.
So this is the idea here. So we're going to cheat here. Instead of working out, we're just going to spray it. But you can see after you
really
work out, the message starts to... So go Army.
I love that.
And then we've got, if you flip on the back here, same way we're going to cheat, but... it's oftentimes it's, beat Navy or, beat them. So we got a message that's going to come out with the Predators around... let's go Predators, let's go Preds. So
I
thought this would be fun for you as you're staying fit and active.
Absolutely.
And then think the Eagles might be interested in something like this?
The whole NFL might be interested in something like that. That's amazing.
I've had a few people that have come and said, Dean, with the divisiveness, the flag. The NFL needs you because this is not about, left, right, whatever political ideology you have. It's all about, patriotism, respect, which are the values of authentically American. So
I agree.
David,
awesome.
These were for you. So
thank you so much.
Thank you, my friend.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Authentically American Podcast. You can follow Authentically American on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, and find all our episodes at authenticallyamerican.us/podcast. If you haven't yet, go to Apple Podcasts to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thank you for listening.